Format?
Also formula. Format means program style. Formula means you will create something. So question and answers is the basic formula for the revelation of Krishna consciousness. Question and answer. Hearing and chanting. Do you follow that? So here are some of the questions. Some of them are too long. So those of you who wrote some long questions, quoting some long section of a book, that will have to wait, because everyone cannot catch in the discussion like that. So I looked through these briefly earlier, so I'm going to read through a few of them and answer a few of them, etc. These are in no certain order. They're just there. Some of these questions I may answer briefly. Some of them I may answer a little more extensively. So this question is, first it is said that Nama means the holy name of Krishna. The holy name of Krishna retires to the background when we enter Krishna Leela. It is said like that. Krishna Nam, Krishna name, goes to the background. Then why chanting of the holy name takes precedence for the devotee to the extent that all other forms of devotional service are to cultivate the chanting of the holy names? Do you follow the question? The statement is, in Krishna Leela, when a devotee goes back to Godhead, he goes to Vaikuntha or he goes to Goloka, particularly we're concerned with Goloka, then it is said, who has said this? Srila Sridhar Maharaj has said this, Bhaktivinoda has said this, maybe Jiva Goswami has written somewhere, the holy name goes to the background and the Leela of Krishna comes to the foreground. But here in this world, it's just the opposite. In this world, holy name of Krishna is in the foreground and the Leela of Krishna is in the background. So why is this? Well, there are several things we have to understand. One is that is the pure world and there's no need of purification. And this is the impure world. By many ways, this world is impure. And this world requires purification. So the holy name of Krishna comes forward in this world to purify the fallen souls who will take the holy name in the proper way, will experience a purification. And along with that purification will come the ability to understand. Generally, we say why, and why. Why this, why that. Why means we want to know. And sometimes we want to know because we don't understand. This is the stage of sambandha, sambandha jnana. What does Krishna, why this is this way, why do we do, why this happens? There's so many whys. Then, when there is no doubt, well, we may still want to know, but all questions based in doubt disappear. And questions begin with the word how. Not why. Why is Krishna blue? Why does Krishna have gopis? Why this, why that? That means we don't understand, generally. And we have some doubt, possibly. You follow? When we are advanced, or we are purified beyond doubt, then we begin to say, how? How can I serve? How can I be of assistance? How do I become a better devotee? A category of how-to questions develops. You see, this is in the stage of abhideya, middle stage, how to serve. One stage, what is Krishna, what am I, what is service, why do we do this, why isn't this world this way, why this, why this, why. We can go on forever with those questions, whys and whys. They're important. But if we do not progress with the answers, then we remain in the why forever. And there is no end to the question and there is no end to the answers. It just goes on forever. The answers are to help us progress. That we have to be willing to do. That we have to be willing to do progress. Many scholars, we call them scholars, means they're well read in various literatures. They ask questions and they pose answers from their comfortable library sitting chairs or the desk in the professor's office, but they don't put it into practice. So we have we inquire why something and we have an answer, and we should try to apply that and not just go on with many questions not paying attention to the answers. Do you follow? So then how to, in the middle stage of devotion, that is called Abhideya. We are serving Krishna. We want to know how to serve Krishna better. There are many questions of that type. Then the higher stage of devotion is called Prayojana. Higher stage, Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. In Prayojana, at one point, all questions stop. No more questions. No necessity of any questions. No doubt. No lack of knowledge. Everything is known. And one is simply concerned with loving Krishna, love of God, Prayojana, Prema Bhakti. But then after some time, a new set of whys and hows develop. Oh, why Krishna is not... why Krishna is treating me like this? Why Krishna is not present before me? Different types of whys and hows. How to please Krishna? Again, this question develops. But first stage, Prayojana, means all questions finished. No more doubt. No more search for knowledge. Everything understood. Everything revealed. Then one enters into love of Krishna. And then a new set of why Krishna is doing this, why Krishna is doing that. You have heard some of the things that Krishna does. Sometimes he does not appear before his devotee. Sometimes he neglects his devotee. Sometimes he says cruel words to his devotee because he wants to extract some aspect of their love. He wants to see their tears. Just like all you cruel parents, you torture your children. You put some candy. They want that. You pull it back. They cry for that. Why are you doing that? Why are you torturing that child? You have some toy. You make him reach for that. You make him scream for that. Why? You enjoy that. He is your child. Right? So Krishna, he wants to enjoy his devotee. He wants to see them cry for him. He wants to see them shout for him. He wants to see them weeping for him. That is his prerogative. He is the Supreme Lord. And he is enjoying the love of his devotees. So that devotee may say at that time, why Krishna is doing this to me? He may again ask why. But that is way, way ahead of us. We should ask why we are suffering in this world. Why we have come here in the first place. Why I'm not making proper progress in devotional service. Why I'm not developing the qualities of a devotee. This type of why we should ask. And we should not concern ourselves so much with the whys of Krishna's love affairs because we are not qualified yet for that. You follow? This is a repeated theme that goes round and round. It is there throughout our Gaudiya Vaishnava literature, Parampara literature. First deserve, then desire. First qualify, then you'll be fine. Don't open your doctor's shop without a certificate. You see. Don't go to Wipro and apply for a job when you haven't even taken any course in that computer science. It's nice that you want to be there, but you have to go through so many steps. You see. Don't hire the villagers to come for harvest when you haven't even planted the rice yet. You understand? No one would do that. That would just be crazy. That would be insane. Because in this world, everybody knows you have to go through so many steps and so many things are required and you qualify. Then you'll have the harvest. Then you'll have the job. Then you'll have the higher position. But very often, in spiritual life, we want to come to the end result without taking the trouble of all the steps in between. Just like there's one place, Muktinath. And for thousands of years, people used to walk there. Nowadays, like, for example, when Gaur Govinda Prabhu was there, he was surprised to see a helicopter land there. And the rich and famous don't have to walk but about 200 yards. You see, and then they can fly back to their five-star hotel. So they can come to Muktinath. But there's no, the only sacrifice required is the almighty rupee, and they are there. But before, your leg pains, and you feel the wind, and you feel the cold, and you feel the hunger, and you're going on a pilgrimage, and there's much austerity involved. Well, it depends on the individual, but overall we would say it's not the same experience just to fly there. It may be some other type of wonderful experience to see the Himalayas in a helicopter, you see. But where is the austerity? We want God darshan, we want God realization. We don't want to give any austerity. We want to eliminate all the intermediate steps and simply come to the final step. That's why this Ayapa business is so popular. Where are they now? Last month, they were shouting all over South India, Ayapa, Ayapa, Ayapa. They're running in buses, all dressed in black. Everybody's got tilak. Everybody's wearing beads. Where are they now? They're just quiet. We're glad they're quiet. They're somewhere in the ordinary life again. Totally the ordinary life. Huh? The day after they get the jyoti, they begin smoking. Sometimes a bus crashes, and the reason is everyone was boozed on the bus. 40 days of austerity, and then returning to our nonsense. We say we only wish, if in a sense, the perfection of life, if people could understand the ultimate goal of life in just 40 days. It's very, very difficult. But it is possible if sincerity is there. But when you understand that goal of life within one day or 45 days, then you don't stop. You don't just quit. It doesn't go. And even if you fall down, you can't forget it. You can't forget it. When you know the goal of life and you have glimpsed even Krishna from a million miles away, you can never forget that experience. You can never get it out of your mind. Even if you become a drunkard, you can't leave it. And you will always find yourself striving for that. Well, that's not what the Ayapa Mela is. The Ayapa Mela is, it's just a fixed program. You do this for 45 days, you get free from sin, you get mukti and all this business in 45 days. There is no such course possible. Once one Swamiji came to America from India, and I won't mention his name, he was offering love of God. And I forget what the price was, but it was reasonable. Something like $45. And one of the devotees went there in a casual dress and sat in his lecture, and he said, you know, he said he was ready and he would give love of God in within 5 minutes. He can give to you love of God. And so at a time, one of our devotees raised his hand and said, "Sir, as I lived in India for a few years and I've read a few books and I've listened to a few things, and as the way I understand it, love of God, it may be achieved after many, many lifetimes. How is it possible in 5 minutes?" He goes, no, not 5 minutes, 2 minutes, not 2 minutes. In 2 seconds I can give you love of God." But it is not such a cheap thing. Simply, here, take this in 2 seconds. Now, Krishna, Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they have such power. And you read about it sometime. Elephants and tigers, they experienced a love of God when Mahaprabhu was in Jharkhand and other forests in South India, not just Jharkhand, many jungles in South India. It is mentioned tigers danced and elephants danced. They saw Mahaprabhu, and seeing that divine living entity, they also got connection with love of God. A fisherman once in Jagannath Puri, because he touched Mahaprabhu in the night when Mahaprabhu was fallen in the ocean, he got love of God. He thought he found a ghost. He couldn't understand. He was feeling so many things, and the name of Hari, 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 Hari kept jumping from his mouth, so he thought a Hari ghost got him. And he told the devotees, "A Hari ghost has me, a Hari ghost has me." They said, "Sir, not a Hari ghost, not possible. Hari will chase away all the ghosts. It's not possible for a Hari ghost. They realized, oh, he has no background. He has no background, but just out of causeless mercy, this totally unqualified man, he is either seen or he has come very close with Mahaprabhu. And he's been burned by that fire of love. And he's experiencing that and he doesn't even know what it is. That is possible in direct connection with the Supreme Lord, if he so wishes it, just to show the power of love or just to show his power. But general process that he recommends is not exactly like that. We come into a temple, we come into a place where the holy name of Krishna is being chanted. We may experience something within our cultural background. We may call that ecstasy, we may call that far out, we may call that wonderful, we may call that nice, peaceful. We may, because of our culture, we'll call it something. Yes, that's some experience of love of Krishna. That energy has come and shocked us there on that moment to attract us. But every time you join in kirtan, it's not possible that every time you will feel the same thing. Because that's not the way Krishna is. Krishna is sometimes coming close and sometimes going far away. Then what happens? You go in the kirtan and you don't feel anything. Then you want that more. Separation makes the heart grow fonder. Krishna keeps himself at a distance, just like it's a rough example, but we want a horse to move, put something to eat in front of him. Then he goes for that thing to eat, the horse moves. That's how you get the donkey to move. So more or less we are like donkeys in this world. We are very slow, we are very stubborn, we are very obstinate, and compared to Krishna we are very stupid also. Even the most intelligent person is a fool before Krishna. And Mahaprabhu said it. He did not try to hide. He took the position. You should take this position. I don't know anything. I am a great fool. Otherwise, what I'm doing in this material world if I'm not a fool? But everyone wants to pose themselves as a pundit. Everyone wants to be recognized as a pundit. There are no pundits in this material world. If they were pundits, they wouldn't be in this material world. There's another word, pond idiots. So, one has to have a certain mood. You cannot stand before Krishna. Oh, Krishna, I am so intelligent. I am so learned. See what I know. Many have tried. And then it all fails. If Krishna wants, he can take all the knowledge of a great scholar and vanish it from his mind. He can't remember anything. And if he wants, he can make an ignorant boy from the village speak the Vedas as he wishes. In fact, it is said that the holy name of Krishna has the potency to make the dumb speak like a learned professor. It has the potency to make the blind see, although they have no eyes. And it makes the lame man able to walk, even he has no legs. The potency of the holy name. The holy name of Krishna is non-different than Krishna himself. When we come in association with the name of Krishna, we become purified. Then, not only is the holy name some purifying agent, all the lila of Krishna is present in the holy name of Krishna. All the lila is also there. It is packed up in absolute sound, eternal divine sound. This place, we're not playing lila. We're playing seva. This is a place of service, not of lila. There is one lila which also offers you service. You want to be in lila with Krishna. Everybody's telling about lila, lila, lila. That's nice. That's a very nice thing. Now, how to be in lila? Be in Sankirtan lila. That lila is going on today. It started 500 years ago. An eternal pastime, which is said to be sweeter than the rasa dance. People want gopi bhav. Gopis want to get in sankirtan. That's how sweet sankirtan is. So, going to lila of Krishna, the holy name is opened up into all its parts. And it is the lila. And Krishna's name is also there. But this repetition of japa is not going on in Krishna Lila. The repetition in kirtan, not going on in Krishna Lila. what is going on in Chaitanya Leela, Gaur Leela. Goloka Vrindavan got some division. We usually don't measure higher and lower, but sometimes we measure by sweetness. You go in the sweet shop, and sometimes somebody says, oh, that one's too sweet. Don't take that one. That's very sweet. You know. And some less sweet. So, Leelas have some degree of sweetness. And it is said that Sankirtan, Gaur Leela, is much sweeter than Krishna Leela. It is called Odari Leela. And one proof of it is, one day, Mahaprabhu happened to fall down in his ecstatic trance, and in his spiritual samadhi, his trance, he's gone there to Krishna Leela. And he described, I was there in Krishna Leela, and I saw Krishna, and Radha, and gopis were there, and they were in a forest. And the Mahaprabhu saw this, and he went there with them, and they were plucking flowers. They were plucking flowers. And possibly for garlands and things like this. They're having their play and they're picking flowers. Then, here in this world, Mahaprabhu has fallen on the ground unconscious. When he used to fall unconscious, the joints of his arms would separate by 5 inches or more. We fall on the ground with a pillow under our head. So many sahajiyas, when they fall down, they make sure their nice silk chadar is lying by their head. That's not the way Mahaprabhu used to fall down. When he fell down, if you saw it, you'd probably run. Actually, you wouldn't be able to run. Your legs would fall out from under you. You wouldn't even be able to see what happened here in this world when he discovered ecstasy, when he saw Krishna Leela. Then the devotees started kirtan. After a short time, Mahaprabhu opened his eyes, and he said, why you made this noise? You made this noise and disturbed me and brought me back here. I was there, I was seeing Krishna. You follow? What was the noise they made? They made the noise of the holy name of Krishna. All great acharyas say the meaning is that even within Krishna Leela, Mahaprabhu heard the holy name being chanted. He came back to where the holy name is. The holy name of Krishna can be considered even sweeter than Krishna Leela. He considered it such, the holy name. So don't think that the holy name is like a bus. It gets you to a place and then you just get off. And by when it says the holy name retires, it's like the bus driver gets out and it's over and you go on to your house. The name is not like that. The name is there, but in a different form. It is there in the active leela of Krishna. So it is impossible to make perfect examples so that we can understand how the vehicle of the holy name helps us and takes us to Krishna leela and then manifest the leela of Krishna. At the same time, goes into the background. You see, it's a different thing. You tell somebody, you're not this body. Is that correct? You're not body, is it? You're Atma, right? So, say you're a Bhagavad Gita preacher. That is a big part of your preacher. You must say that 1,000 times. Sir, you're not this body. You're not Indian. You're not American. You're not even man or woman. You're not cat. You're not dog. You're not any of these things. These are all false, false, false. What you are, a servant of Krishna. If you go to Goloka or even Vaikuntha and you tell somebody, you're not this body, they'll say, you're wrong. There they are, the body. The soul has gone down to a piece so small you can't see it. And it's inside a prison. This body is like a prison. Boy, it aches. We're beaten and tortured in this prison every day. Who jumped out of bed today feeling just like, well, like they were 10 years old, maybe? Even the children wake up. Oh, there's pain. And us older children, we really feel it. Give the hot water. Release the neck, this, the leg, the back. Pain. We're beaten in this body. Every day we're tortured. We're just like in Kamsa's prison. We're being tortured in this body. So, the soul comes free from this body, goes there, but the soul has a spiritual body. But he's not in the spiritual body. He's not in it. He is it. Like this. The lily pond becomes, there's a bud there. There's the soul in the material world. He's like this. He has no shape. You can't see his shape. They give a false shape, this body. Right? Understand? He's liberated soul. He shows his own shape, like the lily or the lotus. He has his own shape. Krishna is not an atma in a body. Krishna is his body. It's absolute, eternal, spiritual body, Satchit Ananda, Vigraha. It's not Kapapita Vayu. It's Satchit Ananda. And all devotees, all bodies, they're like similar nature of Satchit Ananda, eternity. It is made of eternity. Oh, I thought that was a long time. Eternity. Eternity is a substance, spiritual substance. Right? knowledge means all knowing. It is not something found in books. It is a spiritual substance. Ananda. It is not just a feeling I feel someday inside for a minute. Ananda. It is a spiritual substance. It has its reality. And it is more real than this world. The things we call, in this world, we call it etched in stone. That means it's going to be here a long time. You know, cement. You know, let's cement the idea. In the corporate world, they say, let's cement the plan. Cement. What? Cement. It's nothing. It lasts a few hundred years and it just falls apart. These are the things of substance here. They are hard. They are enduring. And they are lasting. And they are nothing in front of spiritual substance. Also, the faith that we have. We think it's just a thing in the mind. It is not. It is a spiritual energy. It is more real than the sunlight of this world. It is the light that reveals Krishna, that is born in our heart due to the association with devotees and the practice. More real. Sometimes in the ashram we say, well, if you go out, let that man go out there and live in the real world for a while and he'll learn a lesson, the hardships of the real world. Because sometimes in ashram life, everything is there, three times prasadam, all these things. And sometimes someone forgets what endeavors are required. So they lose their appreciation. So sometimes we say, better they get a job in the real world. But that is just an expression. Actually, this is the real world. Outside in the world, the job world, the political world, the international world, the terrorist world, it's not the real world. It comes and it goes. And it's been coming and going for millions and millions of years. It will never stop. It just goes on and on and on. Just repeating the season, like the sun. Sun comes and goes at the same time, all the time, for as far as we can remember. Every once in a while, the earth may turn a little bit this way, and later it will turn a little bit this way. But basically, everything just keeps going on. But this is not the real world. This goes on and meets destruction. Again, it is born and created. So, ashram life is actually the real life, the real world, where we surrender to serve Krishna fully. That's the real world. Because there are no vacations in the spiritual world. There are no vacations, there are no paid holidays and all these things. They don't exist there. That's a different world. You don't need a break from that world. Actually, that is the holy day. That is the holiday. That is the supreme resort. After reaching there, you don't have to go anywhere. Everything is there. Do you follow? Should we go to another question? I'm chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra without taking formal initiation. Will it have any effect? Yes. What are the changes experienced? You will want to take initiation. After chanting. Then you'll have ashraya, shelter, or whoever's question that is, and you have shelter. And you have clarity. But it is not like automatic. You'll have to pay for that. Not in any particular amount of rupees, but like you have some facility, what happens when you connect to the power source? Then you'll have current. Then you'll have light. Then you'll have clarity. Then everything will work. All your machineries will work. But if you disconnect at any time, or you don't properly maintain, then there may be a break in the connection. It may be like that. So some people think, initiation, I walk out of the initiation and I feel just some buzzing, some buzzing feeling, or just some light should come or something like that. That's not what that is. You are studying a particular topic on your own. Then you get admission to a college to study that. What is the difference? There you'll find so much help. There you'll find so much source material. There you'll find the company of others in the same mood, and there'll be help from student to student. Teachers are there to help you. Your progress will be quicker. But progress, when you look at it every day, you can't even see it. Like if you stare at a piece of rice growing out of the ground and never take your eyes off of it, you'll swear it's not growing. But it grows every single day. You can watch bamboo today if somebody wanted to do it. You could stand there and watch the new bamboos. And after 7 hours, you'll tell me, it's not growing. I'm watching it, it's not moving. But if we measured it in 7 hours, it will grow 1 inch at least. But you can't see it if you just try to observe it. It's imperceptive to even your eye who's watching it. And that's a piece of bamboo. Spiritual life also is very difficult to perceive the advancement. But suddenly one day, it's like when you go in the Himalayas, your leg pains and you walk, and sometimes you think, what, just give it up, just forget it, we're going nowhere. And suddenly you turn around and you see, whoa, we have come so far, right? But then you look ahead and go, whoa, there is so far to go, you see. So day by day, it's very hard to see advancement. But over a period of time, yes, you can see your own advancement. But more important than you see your own advancement, because that can be dangerous. You think you're advancing. That's a problem. When you think you're advancing, and worse than that, you think you have advanced. You are advanced. You are senior. You are superior. You are all these things. That's very dangerous. But we will see. We will see. Your guardians will see. Even your friends and other devotees. They will see you have advanced. They will see. And they may even see, oh, Prabhu, it's so nice. I'm seeing you're making so much advancement. And if you're really making advancement, you'll think, what does he see? And practically, I think I'm going backwards. Understand, you will not be able to understand your own advancement. And it's very dangerous when you can. But suddenly one day you realize, you know, I don't think of quitting. I don't think of leaving. I don't think of anything except serving Krishna. Then you'll see. You have made advancement. But don't stay there a long time thinking about that. Just get back to your service. You see. This isn't about patting yourself on the back. You know, there are many seminars that teach you how to pat yourself on the back. Seminars, positive thinking courses, all types of things. How to throw the blame for all your problems on your childhood, on your parents, on your teachers. You're all messed up in the world, and the reason is it's somebody else's fault. You see. This is not good. Whatever we have, ultimately, it's our own fault. It's a hard one to swallow. But everything in this world is going on because it's supposed to go on. People think, you mean terrorism is supposed to go on? Well, why not? You've been terrorizing your mother since God knows when. We can't even remember how long. The cow is one of our mothers. Abortion is murdering your own children. So this creates a reaction in nature. And you don't see how it happens. That's nature. Wow. Nature is the super CIA, the super KGB, the super CBI. Nature comes in and puts a tattoo on the inside of your nose and you never know it. Nature is so tricky, so shifty. That's her job, material nature. She'll punish the sinful living entities. You won't see a big sign in the sky one day, because you killed cows, now there's terrorism. But when you have intelligence and you understand the workings of nature and you're in Krishna's energy, devotional energy, you'll begin to see, oh, yeah, all these things are happening. During the Vietnam War, a long time ago, in the 1960s, Prabhupada said, yes, your president, he has a cattle farm. Cattle farm means he raises animals for slaughter, cows, he said. And your children are being slaughtered in Vietnam. This is reaction. So, nobody escapes the stringent laws of material nature. And when we feel that law of nature whacking us, there's no advantage to say, well, why'd you hit me? It's actually his fault. You see, I put the blame on somebody else. Circumstantially, it may be like that. You know, in the world, maybe that happened because of somebody. But ultimately, that happened also because it was your problem from a previous life. Your karma. You did something. You see. So it's very, very complicated, and no one can figure it out. But the way out is stop struggling with material nature and accept, yes, I am at fault. I am the bad person. I surrender to God. I surrender to Krishna. Not like, I want justice. I want justice. I want justice. If you stand before God and say, give me justice, he'll cut your head off. And that's the justice you deserve, because we have done so many things in this world which are wrong. And we have caused so much suffering to others, our head will be cut. So if you got a little smart, you'll stand in front of that supreme judge and say, give me mercy. I want mercy. I want mercy. And you've never found any bhajan yet, any prayer yet, and any bona fide saint that told God, give me justice. Now, they pray for mercy. But then also they say, and whatever, but I'm not asking to be removed of anything. But if I'm to be punished, then punish me. But show me your mercy and never let me forget you. Show me your mercy and never let me be away from service. Show me your mercy and let me always chant the holy name of Krishna. They don't say, show me your mercy and send me a check. Show me your mercy and make me healthy until the last day of my life. Show me your mercy and let me have, you know, 6 sons and only 2 daughters. They don't talk like that to God. The people who don't know what they are, don't know what God is, that's what they talk to God all the time. And you know what? He's like this. He's not listening to these prayers. Once in a temple in Vrindavan, someone told me, my wife was praying every day to Balaram to catch me as her husband. And Balaram fulfilled her desire. Then I just said, I don't think Balaram had anything to do with this. She simply caught you, that's all. End of story. She got the husband of her dreams. That was it. It was fate. Something. Balaram has more important things to do than being the village matchmaker. Understand? But it's a certain pious thinking that God is doing everything for me. He's getting my husband. He's getting my wife. He's giving the right to children. That's also a pious thinking. But don't take that thinking to the extent that you think he's your servant. Oh God, give us our food. Oh God, give me, give me, give me. That's a mistake. It's a pious thinking in the beginning, but don't take it to the extreme, or you're trying to make God your servant. So at a point, there is the thing, it's called think negative. What? Think negative? No, think positive. No, I'm sorry. It's the other way around. Positive thinking got you in all this trouble in this world. You know better than others. You'll be the better leader. Therefore, you shoot the other guy and take over the country, and this and that, and you need this, and you lie and cheat and steal and all this positive. Humility is in the negative field. I need Krishna. I want Krishna. I am dependent on Krishna. I need the devotees. Need and wanting of the right type. This negative feeling is the heart of a devotee. It must be like that. But then, we don't want to see you walking around the ashram with your face all turned down and looking like sadness personified. What's wrong with you? Oh, I need Krishna. You know, not like that. It doesn't come like that. It's not that way. Then we say, okay, get busy. Grab a rake. Rake some leaves. Move some bricks. Wash some pots. If you need Krishna, then get busy. Wipe that ugly face off. Put a smile on your face. And it's very strange. There's, what do people used to say? Aestheticism or renunciation and opulence. Used to be many of Prabhupada's temples, and like Tirupati and other places, so much gold, so much opulence, and then some poor Brahmins living in that, you see. They live in a small house. If you go to any of the ancient places, even Sri Rangapatna, big temple, and Ranganath had so much wealth, and all these small, small houses. And those are the priests and all the different people and the families. You know? Living and daily working and being much, so much opulence. But their own preference to living was very, very simple. Simple living and high thinking, we called it. You see. It's in a materialist, it's a contrast. If you work for the king, and you're not going to go back and live in a little mud hut in the modern day. If you're an advisor of President Bush or somebody, then you live in a big condominium and a gated community and a big bungalow. You don't work for the top and just live in some simple, simple way. That doesn't work in their mind. But when they come and experience an ashram or a big temple, many materialists and Westerners, they are struck by the awkwardness of the thing. Huh? You offer gold and silver to Krishna, but then you just wear this cotton cloth or something. You know? I feel very dressed up today. I have a stiff collar on. Where's my collar? I got a straight collar here somewhere. You know? But Krishna is wearing silks, turbans, and jewels every day. Huh? So my mother would say, "Why you don't dress like that?" Materialist. Oh, God is rich, you should be rich too. So Krishna doesn't do fasting, but devotees do fasting. While devotees are fasting, they cook a nice feast for Krishna. Well, yogi types and all these people, when they do fasting, they don't go near the kitchen. They don't even want to see food. They cannot fast and cook for Krishna. They can't do it. It disturbs their mind too much because they are artificially controlling their senses. And the devotee's sense control is a natural reaction or a natural effect of serving Krishna. That's all. We fast because there are fast days. Krishna says, you should fast on these days. Ekadasi and different Purnimas and things like that. To please Krishna, we are fasting. To please Krishna, we are breaking the fast and taking prasad. So even the simplest devotee is in perfect control of his senses, even compared to great rishis like Vishishta and others. Huh? Who was that rishi who went down Menaka? Vishvamrita. He fell down so many times we lost the count. He's not a pure devotee of Krishna. He's a big rishi, he's a big muni, he's a big Brahmavadi, so many things big. But he's not considered a big devotee of Krishna. But many simple devotees of Krishna, like Ambarish, he has defeated, who did he defeat? Durvasa. Another Maha Muni, big Rishi, Durvasa. So powerful. Right? Ambarish was the king, but actually he was a simple devotee. His duty, his position was his king. But he did not call his armies to defend himself. He did not do anything when the curse of Durvasa was on him. Krishna himself came to defend his devotee. So what is the use of armies? When you have Krishna to defend you, protect you, what do you need armies for? They're nothing in front of Krishna. Even Krishna's own army is nothing in front of him. And the proof of that is Kurukshetra war. Krishna's army went one side, Krishna went to the other side. But in the end, everyone was lost. Who Krishna protected? They were victorious. Who Krishna did not protect, they were lost. So, did we answer that question? Yeah.